All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, April 20th, 2018. Happy 420. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a chilly 34 degrees, but partly sunny, which doesn't happen too often here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Wednesday? We titled the show Nanotech Proteins IOBT, and that would be the Internet of Battle Things, DOD, Google Maven, AI Worry, and Stabby Bots. We talked about how easy it is to hack robots and maybe even turn them into serial killer robots, maybe even give them knives and give them a stabbing motion. And one of those little robots, I don't remember which one it was, but it was one of the little ones that was being promoted for being able to create your own little AI project at home, and it was able to be hacked and turned into a stabby robot. Where we left off the show is that we were going to start looking at a news story titled Europe Divided Over Robot Personhood. I think that's where we're going to continue today. I have a bunch of tabs still open from Wednesday, and I've interleaved a bunch more from this morning, so we'll give this a shot. So Europe divided over robot personhood, and we have kind of talked about personhood before. Where does this all end as we integrate the biological with the technological and we start giving them an electronic personality, start teaching them about our environments and how to respond and maybe even give them emotions and give them some sort of, I don't know if you call it a consciousness, but some sort of being where they are aware of themselves and their environment, and they can make their own decisions. Where do you draw the line? So this came out of Berlin, April 11th, 2018. Think lawsuits involving humans are tricky? Well, try taking an intelligent robot to court. While autonomous robots with human-like all-encompassing capabilities are still decades away, wink, European lawmakers, legal experts, and manufacturers are already locked in a high-stakes debate about their legal status, whether it is these machines or human beings who should bear the ultimate responsibility for their actions, like when they go awry and turn into stabby pots. The battle goes back to a paragraph of text buried deep in a European Parliament document from early 2017, which suggests that self-learning robots could be granted electronic personalities. Remember, a lot of this started when they gave Sophia citizenship of Saudi Arabia. And such status could allow robots to be insured individually and then held liable for damages if they go rogue and they start hurting people or damaging property. Those pushing for such a legal change, including some manufacturers and their affiliates, say the proposal is common sense, and I personally do think they should be held legally responsible and be insured, just like a vehicle, well, maybe even the owner of that robot or vehicle. Legal personhood would not make robots virtual people who can get married and benefit from human rights, they say. It would merely put them on par with corporations, which already have status as legal persons and are treated as such by courts around the world. But as robots and artificial intelligence become hot-button political issues on both sides of the Atlantic, the vice chairman of the European Parliament's Legal Affairs Committee and other proponents of legal challenges face stiffening opposition. In a letter to the European Commission seen by Politico and expected to be unveiled on Thursday, which would be like the 15th or 16th, 156 artificial intelligence experts hailing from 14 European countries, including computer scientists, law professors, and CEOs, warn that granting legal personhood to robots would be quote-unquote inappropriate from a legal and ethical perspective. Quote, by seeking legal personhood for robots, manufacturers were merely trying to absolve themselves of responsibility for the actions of their machines, says Noel Sharkey, Emeritus Professor of Artificial Intelligence and Robotics at the University of Sheffield. The report from Parliament's Legal Affairs Committee recommended the idea of giving robots electronic personalities could then become a model for laws across Europe if turned into a regulatory framework. Devereaux said that while she was not sure that legally defining robots as personalities was a good idea, she was more and more convinced the current legislation was inefficient to deal with the complex issues surrounding the liability of self-learning machines and all the options that should be put on the table. The AI experts behind the letter to the European Commission strongly agree. They say that by adopting legal personhood, we are going to erase the responsibility of manufacturers. And they added that by seeking legal personhood for robots, manufacturers were merely trying to absolve themselves of the responsibility for those actions of their machines. The European Parliament position was what I would call, and that would be the author of this story, a slimy way of manufacturers getting out of their responsibility. Each side turns up the volume on its advocacy. One thing is clear, money is pouring into the field of robotics, and the debate is set to turn out louder in the coming years. Analysts predict a gold rush into emerging fields, and it's only set to accelerate. And add to that, not just big clunky tin can robots, but nanorobots as well. The entire medical industry, how about when nanorobots go rogue? Machines acting as companions in the household, it is expected to triple within the next 5 years from $5.4 billion in 2018 to $14.9 billion by 2023. Sales of cobots, which are the machines that are designed to work alongside humans, are forecast to increase almost 30-fold from over $100 million in spending in 2015 to $3 billion by 2020. And the market for industrial robots, that would be machines that can, for example, put cars together or perform sophisticated assembly line tests, is expected to balloon as well, reaching $40 billion by 2020 compared to $25.7 billion in 2013. The current boom has to do with the fact that robots are just entering a second stage of evolution, 59 years after the first industrial robot joined the assembly line of American General Motors factories. In the decades that followed, machines remained largely reactive and programmed to complete defined tasks and react to a number of situations. The latest developments, by contrast, enable machines to fulfill tasks that previously required human thinking, and current state-of-the-art technology allows computers to learn to make their own decisions by mimicking and proliferating human brain patterns. The concerned lawmakers ask, will such complex processes turn machines into black boxes whose decision-making processes are difficult or even impossible to understand? Well, no, DARPA's trying to fix that, come up with a way to make machines explain themselves and therefore impenetrable for litigators to seek attribution is responsibility for problems. Well, can robots marry? Very good question. That is why advocates argue Europe should grant legal status to robots themselves rather than burden the manufacturers or their owners. And in a scenario where an algorithm can make an autonomous decision, then who should be responsible for these decisions? The current model in which either the manufacturer, the owner, or both are liable would become defunct in an age of fully autonomous robots, and the EU should give robots some sort of legal personhood like companies have. Personality they refer to is a concept that dates back to the 13th century when Pope Innocent IV granted personhood status to monasteries. Today, virtually every country in the world applies this model to companies, which means that corporations have some of the legal rights and responsibilities of a human being, including being able to sign a contract or to be sued. And the legal model for robots, its advocates argue, would be less about giving rights to robots and rather more about holding them responsible when things go wrong, for example, by setting up a compulsory insurance scheme that could be fed by the wealth of a robot that they are accumulating over the time of their existence. This does not mean that the robot is self-conscious or that it can marry another robot, but along similar lines, they stress that the idea behind coming up with an electronic personality was not about giving human rights to the robot, but to make sure that that robot is and will remain a machine with a human backing it. The controversy swirling around futuristic robots masks the reality that robots capable of human-like intelligence and decision-making still remain a far-off prospect. But today's robots are better than humans at some narrow applications, such as playing Go or recognizing images, just like that Google Maven, I think it was the TensorFlow open source API that they wanted them to integrate with some of DARPA's drones. And such a state-of-the-art applications excels only in narrow fields like playing Go or categorizing images, and are essentially the only things that machines can do, unlike human beings, who can at the same time understand language, learn to play a variety of board games, and recognize images. Well, don't forget that machines can also cook food, serve food, and be lawyers, as well as radiologists and cancer doctors. Even so, media reports about galloping advances in robotics, which may suggest all-encompassing robot intelligence is within reach, have infiltrated public debate, and that may lead lawmakers to rush into premature regulations that these signatories are now warning about in their letter. According to some research, the story goes on and on. We're going to jump out of here in a minute. According to some researchers, no robot has done as much as convey false notions about robotics as Sophia, a humanoid robot that made its first appearance in 2016 and has since become a Saudi Arabian citizen and was given a title from the United Nations and opened the Munich Security Conference this past year. I don't mind the idea of a show robot at all, says Sharky, who co-signed the letter and is also the co-founder of the Foundation for Responsible Robotics. But when they start bringing it to the UN, which they did, giving nations the wrong idea of what robotics can do and where AI is at the moment, it is very, very dangerous. It is very dangerous for lawmakers as well. They see this and they believe it, and they are not engineers, and there is no reason not to believe it. But instead, the EU existing civil law rules are sufficient to address the questions of liability, and the 156 AI experts argue in their open letter. Parlance discussion about the full electronic possibility is ongoing, personality is ongoing, and maybe at the end of the day, we will come to a conclusion that it is not a good idea. Well, yeah, it might not be. And if you listen to Elon Musk, so there was a new one. Elon Musk has now come out in a new documentary warning that AI could in the future become an immortal dictator. Yes, he did. I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't know what the documentary is, but maybe we should find it. Authoritarianism is not new, but at least Mussolini and Hitler died. And in the age of artificial intelligence, we could create an immortal dictator from which we can never escape, says Elon Musk in the new documentary called Do You Trust This Computer? That's a good one. In the latest from filmmaker Chris Payne, who met the Tesla co-founder while making 2006's Who Killed the Electric Car. This time around, though, Payne explores the premise and the peril of AI, a subject that Musk has been very vocal about. In 2007, he warned that AI could start World War III, and later that year, he called artificial intelligence the greatest risk we face as a civilization and suggested that the government should regulate it. Now, there are people out there that have brought it to my attention that maybe, just maybe, this call by Musk to regulate artificial intelligence and him jumping up and down making all of these claims that it could turn rogue on us and do evil things is just a way for him to get a leg up in his development of his own AI. Because remember, he plays both sides of the fence as he's telling you to fight against the machine. On the other hand, he is creating a Neuralink telling you if you can't beat him, join him. Get your neural implant so you can compete with the machine of the future. We won't be able to stop it. In Do You Trust This Computer, Musk mentions a terrifying possibility, something that he's very good at. The AI built by authoritarian governments could outlast individual leaders or parties and create a permanent structure of oppression. Seeing as Russia is already using algorithms to undermine democracies, yes, in the 2016 election, and China plans to launch a social credit system to monitor citizens by 2020, this doesn't seem that far-fetched. We've talked about both of those stories. The Tesla and SpaceX founder felt passionate enough about the dangers of AI that he paid for the film to be free on Vimeo through the weekend. Oh no, did we miss it? I don't know if there's a date on this. April 6th, so we did miss it. It is a very important subject, he told a crowd Thursday night at the film's premiere in Los Angeles, and it's going to affect our lives in the ways we can't even imagine right now. So, what do you think of them apples? could become an immortal dictator. Those are things we postulated about, and this is a big pulsating brain in the sky that knows everything and anything that is going on in the world by monitoring you in a dashboard. So then I ran across this one that caught my attention. This was out of the Chicago Tribune, and it is titled, A Robot Mayor for Chicago. Well, it is logical, and this was brand new today, April 20th, 2018, at 5 a.m. Japan, leave it to Japan, has come up with a great idea that could ruin politics forever, and that would be robot mayors. In Chicago, in a city where mayors have historically ruled with iron fists, might actually benefit from leaders who are driven by cold logic rather than an ambition for lust and power. A strong robot mayoral candidate might push Mayor Rahm Emanuel out of town and then order him in one of those scary neutral AI voices to move to New York City and become Stephen Colbert's houseboy. I think I'd pay for that. Or a robotic mayoral candidate could save Chicago from Cook County's clerk Dorothy Goat Lady Brown, which I kind of raised an eyebrow, but wait till you hear this story. The ethically troubled Brown announced her campaign for mayor just as she finds herself in a deep federal bribes for jobs investigation relating to sketchy loans to her goat meat company. So I guess she was running a goat meat company on the side. Yes. Yes, that would be goat meat. Robots don't eat goat, Dorothy. They are impervious to your charms. So let artificial intelligence determine policies. Remember I said they're going to use a lot of these shady politicians and elections to turn the public opinion on artificial intelligence in government to a positive view. Because they're trying to convince you that AI can't be bribed. AI isn't a puny human with all of our foibles. Let artificial intelligence define policies by gathering city data, and we can create clearly defined politics, says Michuhitu Misuta, the frontman for a silver female robot, complete with steel breasts and a neutral yet possibly homicidal facial expression in Tama City, Japan. Tama's new town is the most advanced city in Japan 40 years ago, says Metsusuma, and it stands that the aging population will only grow, prompting a need for change in the current administration. Chicago was advanced once, too, and now Chicago is on its knees to Jeff Bezos and his drone army, and some of you are probably thinking it would be a terrible idea to turn a great city and eventually an entire nation over to artificial intelligence, even if it did possess a cool, bald, female-looking, silver metallic head. And if so, you are probably one of those who hate science and favor cash transactions, but you really must evolve. And again, that's not me saying this. That is the author of the story, John Cass, contact reporter of the Chicago Tribune. Experts say there's good and bad in every technological advance, right? The double-edged sword, but you definitely don't want AI running the show. A good thing is that a robot mayor of Chicago would possess high intelligence and would not care about flattering wise guys, hedge fund bosses, or public unions. A robot mayor would never allow African-American bicyclists from the South Side to get hit with an overwhelming number of bike traffic tickets while leaving white North Side little bike people to slide and continue their cocky bike scaffolding ways. So apparently there's an issue over discrimination in enforcing bike laws across Chicago. A robot mayor would treat all bike people equally. And though it might target women, and robot mayors would also be impervious to bribes and threats. A robot mayor would use pure logic, not politics, to portion out government services, including the police. And if it meant not allowing cars to drive in the city, or they banned alcohol, or eliminated just a few of those remaining rib joints that cook with real wood, not gas, it would be done. Yes, our robot overlords are going to tell you what's right and what is wrong. and then execute. Maybe you will be next. Chicago would be free of such human nonsense, and eventually it would be logical. Even the red light cameras and a robot mayor would finally treat all aldermen equally, since the majority who vote blindly with the human mayor are themselves known robots. But not everything will be good, and I wouldn't make all those good things either. Once robot mayors become powerful enough, when the singularity happens in a couple of years and AI takes over, robot mayors will ruthlessly squash dissent, so keep your mouth shut. And if you told a robot mayor that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, the robot mayor might smile with a silvery metallic lips and nod its metallic head as you eat a copy of the Constitution just to appease him or her. Are robots offended by pronouns? Well, I hope not. History tells us that human politicians become emotional when criticized. And some of them actually use Twitter, and others may have directed media allies to attack those who dare to cause them grief. But a robot mayor made of steel wouldn't need Twitter bots, and they wouldn't even need Russian ones or even media bosses. A robot mayor might consider it supremely logical to crush the head of a bothersome columnist whose feet would twitch upon the ground of as his terrified editors watch in silent horror. But the needs of the many outweigh the few, right? Yes, happily. Citizens could know that a robot mayor would never become involved in a meat-related side business like Dorothy Brown did. And an ex-employee at the clerk's office, Silva Subrium Rajam, has been convicted of lying to a federal grand jury, and he admitted paying a $15,000 bribe for a county job. The alleged bribe was listed as a loan to Goat Masters, which is a goat meat supply company owned by Brown and her husband. And a while back, Brown told the Tribune that the goats are good business. They have lots of babies, so you can buy a few goats and then you can increase their numbers, your profits, very quickly, she said. Goat meat is actually being eaten by a lot of different groups in the United States, and it is very profitable, unquote. Brown's mayoral gambit could simply be a move to cast herself as a champion of fellow African Americans as the feds close in, or as some non-robots believe, her mayoral campaign could simply be a cry for help to the U.S. Attorney General asking, just indict me already. But robot mayors, as we've already established, aren't big on goats, and they don't give two figs for politics or public relations. They are robots, damn it, so elect one. And just how frightening is that? So then there was another, I don't know, this was a paper, but it's really long. It is 101 pages, so we're not going to read the whole thing. February 2018. Is a publication, it's a co-publication out of a bunch of different institutes. I know one of which Noel Sharkey is a member of, and one of which Elon Musk is a member of, maybe even a few of these. It comes out of the Future of Humanity Institute, as well as Oxford University Center for the Study of Existential Risks, the University of Cambridge, the Center for the New American Security, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, as well as the Open AI Group. And it is titled The Malicious Use of Artificial Intelligence, Forecasting, Prevention, and Mitigation. Let's scroll down here a little bit to the executive summary. AI and machine learning capabilities are growing at an unprecedented rate. And remember, this is February 2018, so it's quite recent. And these technologies have many widely beneficial applications, ranging from machine translation to medical image analysis. Countless more applications are being developed every day and can be expected over the long term, but less attention has historically been paid to the ways in which AI can be used maliciously, unless, of course, you've listened to the show. This report surveys the landscape of potential security threats from malicious uses of artificial intelligence technology like little stabby bots and proposes ways to better forecast, prevent, and mitigate these threats. We analyze but do not conclusively resolve the question of what the long-term equilibrium between attackers and defenders will be, and we focus instead on what sort of attacks are likely to be seen if adequate defenses are not developed. In responses to the changing threat landscape, we make four high-level recommendations. Number one, policymakers should collaborate closely with technical researchers to investigate, prevent, and mitigate potential malicious uses of artificial intelligence like killer sex bots. And number two, researchers and engineers in artificial intelligence should take the dual-use nature of their work seriously, allowing misuse-related considerations to influence research priorities and norms, and proactively reaching out to relevant actors when harmful applications are foreseeable. Number three, best practices should be identified in research areas with more mature methods for addressing dual-use concerns, such as computer security, and imported where applicable to the case of AI. And number four, actively seek to expand the range of stakeholders, like including the Department of Defense and domain experts involved in discussions of these challenges. As AI capabilities become more powerful and widespread because they've been democratized by all of these open projects where software and application programming interfaces are being offered for free, like that TensorFlow program they're using in Maven, we expect the growing use of AI systems to lead to the following challenges in the landscape of threats. Number one would be the expansion of existing threats. Oh, yes, it even gets worse. This is just the beginning. The cost of attacks may be lowered by the scalable use of AI systems to complete tasks that would ordinarily require human labor. Remember, robots are going to take all the jobs, intelligence, and expertise. The natural effect would be to expand the set of actors who can carry out a particular attack and the rate at which they can carry out these attacks and set potential targets. So as we have the Internet of Battle Things rolling out everywhere, including the Internet of Things, they will be able to take control of these devices that invade every area of your lives and introduce new threats. New attacks may arise through the use of AI systems to complete tasks that would otherwise be impractical for humans. In addition, malicious actors may exploit vulnerabilities of AI systems deployed by defenders. And last but not least, change to the typical character of threats. We do believe there is reason to expect attacks enabled by the growing use of AI to be especially effective, finely targeted, difficult to attribute, and likely to exploit vulnerabilities in AI systems. We structure our analysis by separately considering three security domains. Remember, we got to keep you safe now. Let that dangling carrot invade your lives, and now we can take control because we have issues such as digital security. The use of AI to automate tasks involved in carrying out cyber attacks will alleviate the existing trade-off between scale and efficacy of attacks. This may expand the threat associated with labor-intensive cyber attacks, and we also expect novel attacks that exploit human vulnerabilities, like using speech synthesis for impersonation, existing software vulnerabilities like automated hacking, or vulnerabilities of AI systems like adversarial examples. And that would be where they have two AIs competing against each other to become smarter and teach themselves, as well as data poisoning. And that would be going through large amounts of data in a database and giving untrue answers to the AI to make them believe that wrong answers are correct. And they have been able to do that already in different types of attacks. Physical security, of course, and they'd be attacking with drones or other physical systems. And then political security, which would be the use of AI to automate tasks involved in surveillance, persuasion, and they'll be creating targeted propaganda or video manipulation, and expand threats associated with privacy evasion and social manipulation on a very large scale. And I think they're already doing some of that. Don't believe anything they tell you. And in addition to the high-level recommendations listed above, we also propose the exploration of several open questions and potential interventions within four areas of research. And this would be learning from and with the cybersecurity community, exploring different openness models, promoting a culture of responsibility, and developing technological and policy solutions to put a kibosh on rogue actors. Now, where is this going to leave us? Well, we've read about a few different things that they've been able to do with AI. And I thought this was a good time for a reminder. March 5th, 2018, out of digitaltrends.com, mind-reading AI produces a description of what you're thinking about. So don't think you can run or you can hide. Because they'll be able to tell from a satellite who those people are who aren't with the program. Thinking that Google's search algorithm is good at reading your mind? That is nothing compared with a new artificial intelligence research project coming again out of Japan, which can analyze a person's brain scans and provide a written description of what they were looking at. To generate its captions, the artificial intelligence is given an fMRI brain scan taken while a person is looking at a picture, and then it generates a written description of what that person was thinking when they were viewing it. An illustration of the level of complexity it offers is like a dog sitting on the floor in front of an open door or a group of people standing on a beach. Both of these turned out to be absolutely accurate. Quote, we aim to understand how the brain represents information about the real world, says Ichiro Kichibashi, one of the researchers from Japan's Okushimo University. And toward that goal, we demonstrated that our algorithm can model and read out perceptual contents in the form of sentences from human brain activity. To do this, we modified an existing model that could generate sentences from images using a deep neural network, which is a model of a visual system, and then a recurrent neural network, which is a model that can generate sentences. Specifically, using our data set of movies and movie-evoking brain activity, we trained a new model that could then infer activation patterns from brain activity. Before you get worried about some sort of dystopian future in which this technology is used as a supercharged lie detector, though, Kobayashi points out that they are still a long way, wink, from real-world deployments. So far, there are not any real-world applications for this, says Kobayashi. However, in the future, this technology might be a quantitative basis for a brain-machine interface. I don't know if we're going to get there today, but I have some nasty stuff about Japan from their Unit 731 bioterror torture facility during World War II. There was some new news about that. So don't worry about it. There is no current real-world application that we could use this for. But as we go after people who are mentally deviant in the name of mental disease and these dystopian governments they're talking about that'll be run by the future of AI. This is just crazy. Remember, they can actually tell micro expressions and whether or not you are lying already with machine learning. Just imagine when they have eyes in the sky everywhere and they could be scanning everything and everyone. We'd like to understand how the brain works under naturalistic conditions, and towards such a goal, we are planning to investigate how various forms of information, and that would be our vision, semantics, languages, impressions, etc., are encoded in the brain by modeling the relationship between our experiences and brain activity, because we also want to figure out how to manipulate it. We also aim to investigate how multimodal information is related to achieving semantic brain activity in the brain. And in particular, we will work on generating descriptions about what that person is thinking. All right, so now they take it even a step further. Mind reading AI algorithm can work out what music is playing in your head. And that was just a couple days ago, April 17, 2018. Most of us have used applications like Shazam, which can identify songs when we hold up our phone to a speaker. But what if it was possible for an application to identify a piece of music based on nothing more than your thought patterns? Impossible? Well, perhaps not. According to a new piece of research being carried out by investigators at the University of California at Berkeley, in 2014, researcher Brian Pasley and colleagues used a deep learning algorithm in brain activity measured with electrodes that turned a person's thoughts into a digitally synthesized speech. And this was achieved by analyzing a person's brain waves while they were speaking in order to decode a link between speech and brain activity. Well, hopefully this wasn't part of any type of project that Regina Duggan had been working on, so you could just think things in the speech center of your brain and affect your computer and not use a mouse or a keyboard. Jump forward a few years, and the team has now improved that earlier research, and they have applied their findings to music. Specifically, they were accurately 50% or more than a previous study able to predict the sounds a pianist is thinking of based on their brain activity. During auditory perception, when you listen to sounds such as speech or music, we know that certain parts of the auditory cortex decompose these sounds into acoustic frequencies, for example, low or high tones. We then tested if these same brain areas also processed imagined sounds in the same way you internally verbalize the sound of your own voice or imagine the sound of classical music in a silent room. We found that there was a large overlap and also distinct differences in how the brain represents the sound of imagined music. And by building a machine learning model of the neural representation of the imagined sound, we used to model the guess with reasonable accuracy what sound was imagined at each instant in time. Well, that's messed up. What if they can any voices in your head? And I thought we read that they were able to already do that before, like pull the voices out of your head of what you're thinking about. And for this study, the team recorded a pianist's brain activity when he played music on an electronic keyboard. And by doing this, they were able to match up both the brain patterns and the notes that he was playing. And then they performed the experiment again, but turned off the sound of the keyboard and asked the musician to imagine the notes he was playing. And this training allowed them to recreate their music predicting algorithm. The long-term goal of our research is to develop algorithms for a speech prosthetic to restore communication and, of course, paralyzed individuals who are unable to speak. We are quite far from realizing that goal, he says, but this study represents an important step forward, and it demonstrates that the neural signaling during auditory imagery is sufficiently robust and precise for use in machine learning algorithms that can predict acoustical signals just from measured brain activity. What do you think about them apples? So they're going to be able to suck things out of your mind. Well, now here's another one. 4/11/2018, crime predicting AI is not science fiction anymore. They were rolling it out in China, and now they're about to roll it out in India. Artificial intelligence programs promise to do everything from predicting the weather to piloting autonomous cars, but now AI is being applied to video surveillance, promising to thwart criminal activity by not by detecting crimes in progress, but by identifying a crime before it happens. And this is predictive crime. The goal is to prevent violence such as sexual assaults, but it could also... Could such admirable intentions turn into a Minority Report-style pre-crime nightmare? Well, such a possibility may seem like a plot line from an episode of Black Mirror, again, but it is no longer the stuff of science fiction. Cortica, which happens to be an Israeli company with deep roots in security and AI research, recently formed a partnership in India with Best Group to analyze terabytes of data streaming from CCTV cameras in public areas. One of the goals is to improve safety in public places, such as on city streets, bus stops, and train stations. And it is already common for law enforcement in cities like London and New York to employ facial recognition and license plate matching as part of their video camera surveillance. But Cortica's AI promises to take it much further for looking for, and here's one we've talked about many times before, quote-unquote, behavioral abnormalities that signal that someone is about to commit a crime or even a violent crime. The software is based on a military and government security screening systems that tries to identify a terrorist, ding ding, by monitoring people in real time, looking for what? Oh, so-called micro expressions. Yes. Remember we mentioned that and we've talked about that at length before, which happen to be minuscule twitches, mannerisms that can belie a person's nefarious intentions. Such a telltale sign is so small that they can elude all but an experienced detective, but not the unblinking eye of AI. And at a meeting in Tel Aviv, before the deal was announced, co-founder and COO Karina Odlinev explained that Cortica's software is intended to address challenges in identifying objects that aren't easily classified according to traditional stereotypes. One example Odlinev described involved corner cases, such as bed falling off a truck on a highway, that are encountered in driving situations, precisely the sort of unique event that programs controlling autonomous cars will have to be able to handle in the future. For that, you need unsupervised learning. In other words, the software has to learn the same way that a human learns. But to create such a program, Cortica did not go to the neural network route, which, despite its name, is based on probabilities and computing models rather than how actual brain works. Instead, Cortica went to the source, and in this case is the cortical segment of a rat's brain. And by keeping a piece of the brain alive ex vivo, and that would be outside the body, and connecting it to a microelectrode array, Cortica was able to study how the cortex reacted to a particular stimuli. By monitoring the electrical signals from the hunk of rat brain, the researchers were able to identify specific groups of neurons called cliques that process specific concepts. And from there, the company built signature files and mathematical models to simulate the original processes in the brain. The result, according to Cortica, is an approach that of AI that allows for advanced learning while remaining transparent. In other words, if the system makes a mistake, say it falsely anticipates that a riot is about to break out or that the car ahead is about to pull out of a driveway, programmers can easily trace the problem back to the process or the signature file responsible for the erroneous judgment. Initially, Cortica's autonomous AI will be used by Best Group in India to analyze massive amounts of data generated by cameras in public places to improve safety and efficiency. Best Group is a diversified company involved in infrastructure development and major supplier to the government and construction clients, so it wants to learn how to tell when things are running smoothly and when they are not. But it is hoped that Cortica's software will do considerably more in the future. It could be used in the future for robo-taxis to monitor passenger behavior, prevent sexual assaults as well. And Cortica's software can also combine data not just from video cameras, but also video from drones and satellites. And it can learn to judge behavioral differences, not just between law-abiding citizens and erstwhile criminals, but also between peaceful, crowded markets and political demonstrations that are about to turn violent. So predictive information would allow a city to deploy law enforcement to a potentially dangerous situation before any lives are lost or anything goes awry. But however, in the wrong hands, this could also be abused. A despotic regime, for example, might use such information to suppress dissent and arrest people even before they've had a chance to organize a protest or open their mouth with a dissentful sentence. In New York City, during a demonstration of how Cortica's autonomous AI is being applied to autonomous cars, Cortica's vice president, Patrick Flynn, explained that the company is focused on making the software efficient and reliable to deliver the most accurate classification of data possible. What clients do with that information, stop a car or make it speed up to avoid an accident, is up to them. So we're going to wash our hands in any liability so we don't get blamed for the killer drones. The same would apply to how a city or a government might allocate its policing resources. The policy decisions are strictly outside of Cortica's area, says Flynn in a cover your ass moment. Nevertheless, the marriage of AI to networks that are ubiquitous, such as webcams, are starting to generate more anxiety about privacy and personal liberty, as it should. It is not just foreign despotic governments that people are worried about. In New Orleans, Mayor Mitch Landrieu has proposed $40 million crime-fighting surveillance plan, which includes networking together municipal cameras with live feeds from private webcams operated by businesses and individuals. This proposal has already drawn public protest from immigrant workers concerned that federal immigration officials might use these cameras to hunt down undocumented workers and deport them. Meanwhile, like subjects trapped in a Black Mirror world, and yes we are, consumers may already be unwillingly submitting themselves to such AI-powered surveillance. Google's $249 clip camera, for example, uses rudimentary AI to automatically take pictures when it sees something it deems significant. Amazon, whose Alexa is already subject of eavesdropping paranoia, has purchased a popular video doorbell company called Ring, and we talked about those, where it uses facial recognition for people coming to your door. And GE Appliances are also planning to debut a video camera-equipped hub for kitchens and its refrigerators later this year. In Europe, Electrolux will debut a stream over a stream oven this year with a built-in webcam. How crazy is that? So you can check on the cake cooking when you're not home. And while these technologies raise the specter of Big Brother monitoring our every move and every bun in every oven, there is still a laudable hope that the using sophisticated AI like Cortica's program could improve safety, efficiency, and save lives. Wink. One can't help wonder, for example, what would have happened if such technology were available and used in the Uber that the 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz took on his way to murder 17 people at Major Lee Stone Douglas High School. Oh, yes, the Uber driver didn't notice anything amiss, but could an AI-equipped camera have detected his micro-expressions, revealing his intentions and alerting police? Well, don't worry about it, because in the future, we are probably going to find out. How nuts is that? I mean, that just is really freaking crazy. And they're going to be able, and I've talked about that, scan you in those self-driving cars, and then maybe even the doors are going to lock. And they're going to drive you directly to the police station, like my 5-year-old daughter responded to in some sort of questionnaire they made them take in school at the end of an online exam that was sponsored by Google, and looking at the thoughts of 5-year-olds about self-driving cars. All right, so now let's get back to the brain. Going to jump off of AI and all the probing of the brain to develop better AI like that Cortica was doing. And we're going to look at something that they had mentioned a couple stories back, and they would be reading what was going on in the brain so they could figure out what auditory signals you were thinking about in your brain so they could reproduce music or sounds by using probes. This is a brain probe story that came out just the other day, April 13th, 2018, out of futurism.com. Scientists who stick needles in brains are now curious about what those needles actually do to the brains. Don't you think you should have thought about that beforehand? I would say so. Neuroscience research is surprisingly brutal. A lot of what we have learned about the brain has come from opening up the organ and just poking around. Definitely not an activity for the squeamish. The best tool for the job? Well, often it is electrodes. And that would be a needle-like probe that can be inserted into the brain. DARPA uses those too. Research uses electrodes to measure how individual brain cells behave and to give people control over prosthetic limbs, or to develop other technology that interact directly with the brain, like brain-computer interfaces. But there is a reason to question exactly how much these probes can teach us, or even if they are safe, according to an article published April 6, 2018 in the Journal of Neural Engineering. In it, neuroscientists point out that studying a brain with neural electrodes can cause quite a few issues, and some of these problems are relatively simple or can be solved through better engineering. For example, the surfaces of these electrodes that contact, stimulate, or record brain activity can degrade or slip, especially in a conscious research patient. And this can give rise to faulty readings. A degraded electrode would make it seem like the cell is measuring a weaker signal than it really is. And because we can't always tell why these issues are occurring, it can be difficult for researchers to support their findings. But remember, they've been working on neural dust motes for a long time, so that should take care of that problem. But the biggest problem the team found goes back to the fact that we actually know very little about the brain. And in particular, we don't know much about how our brain tissues respond to being jabbed with an electrode. Well, so just step right up. For all we know, the article points out the neuroscientists have spent countless experiments trying to study brain cells that they killed or damaged while inserting that very electrode. And there are some solutions out there. For these, the article focuses on areas of the brain's visual cortex. And that'll be what you see. For example, scientists can tell whether or not they are studying cells that are still alive simply by having the research subject look at visual look at a visual and see if the cells respond. And even so, the researchers conclude that our technology is caught up to the limits of what we actually know about the brain. In order for neuroscientists to regain the confidence in their experimental findings, we will need to invest billions of dollars in actually sorting out these basic questions of how brains are responding to electrodes and other technological innovations. So how great is that? I think Parkinson's patients are the ones that they insert electrodes into the brain. Well, listen to this. Here's another new one about the brain, and there's no electrodes involved in this one, but this really caught my attention. And I think we might do a big show about cardiovascular disease at some point in the future and all those horrible things that they don't tell you about until it is too late. And even then, they don't tell you all about it. But here's a story out of Medical News Today. Came out April 16, 2018, titled "Sitting Harms the Brain." And we already knew that sitting is the new smoking. But sitting harms the brain regardless of the amount of exercise. Now, that's quite a shocker to me. Too much sitting, which this job requires, which is one of the reasons why I'm going to have to end doing what I'm doing here pretty soon in the not too distant future. Too much sitting may not be good for the brain, according to a preliminary study of adults who've reached middle age and beyond. Researchers from the University of California in Los Angeles, UCLA, discovered that among 35 adults aged 45 to 75 without dementia, and I fall right into that category, those who spent more time sitting in the day hit a greater thinning of the medial temporal lobe in their brain. This is the area of the brain that is important for making new memories, and even high levels of physical activity after the fact did not make a difference, the authors concluded in a report on their findings that is now being published in the journal PLOS-ONE. Study author David Merrill, an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry and biobehavioral sciences at UCLA, proposes that further research should now be done to see whether reducing sedentary behavior reverses the effects that they found. In their study background, the author refers to an increasing amount of literature that suggests that physical exercise might just delay the development of Alzheimer's and other dementias, and it can benefit brain structure. But one explanation that has been suggested for this effect is that physical activity raises blood flow in the brain, which in turn helps the growth of new nerve cells and offsets the decline in the structure and the function. But in comparison with the volume of literature on the impact of exercise, there is a paucity of research on the relationship between sedentary behavior and dementia risk, and only a few studies have examined the mechanistic effects on the brain. This should be cause for concern, they argue, especially as it has been suggested that around 13% of the global burden of Alzheimer's may be due to spending too much time sitting, which many jobs require. I see sitting lawsuits in the future. And based on such an estimate, and it's not just Alzheimer's, it's cardiovascular disease and arterial disease and narrowing of the arteries and metabolic disease and all these other things, all these Western diseases, as they are feeding you full of high fructose corn syrup and fats and all these things that start to send your body into a tailspin of degeneration. This is all from the same mechanism. Based on an estimate, they calculated that reducing sedentary behavior by 25%, so this could be everyone's going to have to wear a Fitbit in the future, could potentially prevent more than 1 million cases of Alzheimer's disease worldwide, because it's going to help bring the cost of healthcare down. The team decided that to focus on the medial temporal lobe, because it is known that in this area, the brain declines with age, and it leads to memory impairment. And also, they note that greater aerobic fitness has also been tied to a greater volume in the hippocampus, and that would be an area of the medial temporal lobe that has been heavily studied and is important for memory. For their study, researchers explored the links between medial temporal lobe thickness, exercise, and sitting time in 25 women and 10 men aged 45 to 75 who did not have symptoms of dementia, and on an average of hours spent sitting every day and physical activity levels came from detailed questionnaires that they filled out. The medial temporal lobe thickness was measured from our MRI scans. And when they analyzed the data, the researchers found that there were no significant correlations between levels of physical activity and the medial temporal lobe thickness. However, they did find that sedentary people had less medial temporal lobe thickness, and they speculate that this could result in an increased variability of blood sugar and lead to reduced brain blood flow, which in turn impairs brain health. And they think the prolonged sitting might be bad for the brain, and that sedentary behavior may have deleterious effects on your glycemic control. And again, these are all things that lead to cardiovascular disease as well. Future studies should include longitudinal analyses and explore mechanisms, as well as the efficacy of decreasing sedentary behaviors in the general population. And like I said, Fitbits for everyone. So where do we go from here? So now let's look at DNA. Remember, they want DNA to ensure your health. They want DNA on the blockchain. New cryptocurrencies could let you control selling access to your DNA data. So step right up. Did you know that when you take certain genetic tests, the company can make money by selling your data to other online businesses? Well, of course we did. Now, new blockchain-based marketplaces, we've talked about this before, could get an individual's control over access to their encrypted DNA data and the ability to sell it to research companies for their own profit. Consumer DNA testing saw unprecedented demand in 2017. And people are now using these services, and they may not realize that the real money for some of these companies could lie in the sale of genetic data to third parties for medical research. So become a guinea pig, give them your DNA, and they'll be able to cure all disease. And some new companies, are giving new perks. Move over, gym memberships. The hot new employee perk involves spitting into a cup. Oh, yes. Happy Thursday. This is from yesterday, April 19, 2018. Chip Berg, the CEO of Levi Strauss. And Levi Strauss also worked with Google and Regina Duggan on some of those new wearable computing devices like the Levi Strauss jackets that you could use your arm as touch screen to manipulate a computer. Levi Strauss CEO came by this morning for a visit. We had a good sprawling conversation that covered everything from blue jeans to Coachella to department stores to gun violence and brain health. Guess which part I'm going to talk about here? Well, that's right. This is this new brain health project, and they are going to take DNA from a patient.